sea, it's like turning the Titanic round. It takes forever. Are you the sort of person that can deal with the bitchiest, backbiting business that there is? There's one thing I've never talked about.
Conversations. Radio people in their own words. Alone. Graham Torrington.
If I was someone that grew up in a family of five children, my dad was a motor mechanic and my mum was a home economics teacher. And because there were five children, I'm told it was tough going. Mum had to go out to do extra work at night time, and Dad used to repair cars at the weekend just so there was enough to feed the family. But it was a happy childhood. I loved my childhood. And I think if my mum were here now, she'd probably say that Graham was always a loner. And I think that's probably why I ended up in a radio studio, because anybody who knows, most of our time as radio presenters is sat in a studio by yourself. So being a loner was not a great problem for me at all growing up. Although I was part of a big family, school days for me, not that exciting. In fact, even if I come up to present day when I have to sit in a meeting or a lecture theatre and being sat there lectured to, I've never really enjoyed those days at all. So sat in a classroom for me was a little bit boring. I never wanted to go on to further education or university or anything like that. I just wanted to get out and get into the big wide world of work. And as I say, I had friends at school, but I never really enjoyed school days at all, and as soon as I could leave school, that's exactly what I wanted to do. When it came to leaving school, I knew what I wanted to do, but I think the world wasn't ready for Graham Torrington to be on the radio in those days.
So please play the record nice and loud so we can drown his singing. With much love from Mum and Dad and everybody and all the friends of James Purvis of Brunswick Hill Gala Shields. Right, just showing this one very quickly.
And if I go back to my early memories of radio, I can remember being an eight-year-old lad when all the family were asleep on a Saturday or Sunday morning. I would come down and put on Junior Choice. I would also have my little transistor radio where I would take to bed, and there was a little earpiece in there. Do you remember we used to have little earpieces in transistor radios? And I would be there listening to Radio Luxembourg, and I knew at that point I wanted to be that person on the radio. I knew it was going to happen. So when I left school, and you've got to remember, back in those days, we're talking 75, 76 here, there were the BBC stations, and I think there was something like 19 commercial radio stations, and I was way too young and way too inexperienced to ever be invited to be on a commercial radio station. So I went to work in a department store. And learnt about life, I have to say, working in a department store. My very first department was the men's toiletries department, where I used to flog aftershave. Then I moved on to major domestic appliances, and I was flogging washing machines and had no idea anything about washing machines or dishwashers. And I can remember little old ladies coming in and asking me about spin speeds of the Bosch 0583 or whatever it was called. And I had no idea, so I blagged my way through that. But was quite successful, apparently, flogging washing machines. Then I went on to menswear, went on to the fashion department, and actually became manager of the Wrangler shop. Do you remember Wrangler jeans? Well, I used to be the manager of that department. So happy days, really, really happy days of working at a department store, and learned how to drink, learned how to party, and had the time of my life. I'm a Brummie, and I can do the Birmingham accent. Other people who don't live in Birmingham can very rarely do the Birmingham accent, but I know a Birmingham accent, and I can do a Birmingham accent. I don't think I was ever like that. And I think over the years, people have said to me, "Do you really come from Birmingham?" Yes, I do come from Birmingham. There was somebody that worked in that department store that was selling a mobile disco. He was flogging it for, I think, something like £50 or something like that. So I actually bought this clapped-out mobile disco unit and started doing parties, doing mobile discos. That actually got to the point where I was enjoying that more than the department store. And there was a job that became available on a caravan park in Clacton-on-Sea. The title was Assistant Entertainment Manager. I drove down in my marina van with my clapped-out disco unit in the back, and I worked in this massive caravan park in a place called St Osyth, which is just by Clacton-on-Sea, DJing 7 nights a week. And then on a Sunday morning, I used to get up and do the swimming gala, and then I used to show the films on a Sunday afternoon. And I think I probably saw Star Wars about 25 times, being the projectionist there. The season came to an end, and of course, you come back to Birmingham. I didn't particularly want to go back to the department store, and I was listening to BRMB, and BRMB was starting something called the Walkathon, and they were asking for volunteers to go in and answer the telephones to sign up people to be part of the very first BRMB Walkathon.
I didn't really intend to go all the way around. I thought I'd just do about 15, 16 to see how I'd get on. And
the BRMB Walkathon was a 26-mile walk around the outer circle of Birmingham city centre, raising money for charity. So I phoned up. I was sat at BRMB answering telephones for people who wanted to take part in the very first BRMB Walkathon. This was big, big news for Birmingham and for BRMB, obviously. And I remember I used to have to take a script from the second floor to the fifth floor where the studios were. And once an hour, the on-air presenter would read out the latest totals of the amount of people that were going to be taking part in the BRMB Walkathon. And I always used to ask if I could take the script to the fifth floor into the studio. So I would walk into the studio and hand a piece of paper to someone like Les Ross or Brendan Kearney or Stephen Rhodes, and they would read out the figures of the latest people that were going to take part in the Walkathon. I was so excited. I was so excited. So that was a little step closer to being that person on the radio.
Let's ring another number round, another box round the Walkathon route, shall we? See what we're going to get here. So far it's been 50% success rate. Somebody was actually standing in the box waiting.
And whilst I was there, I got to talk to the programme controller, who was Bob Hopton. He told me, he said, "I believe you want to be a DJ on the radio." And he said to me, and I remember these words now, "Okay, are you the sort of person that can deal with the bitchiest, backbiting business that there is? All of your on-air colleagues will hate you. They'll all bitch about you. If you can take that on board, I think possibly you could do it." He said, "Get upstairs in the studio and practice. Practice, practice. Let's see where it goes from there." So the Walkathon came to an end, and a position became vacant in the traffic department. Bits of tape used to come in with the commercials on, and I used to have to transfer them onto carts. And that was my very first job, carting up ads in the traffic department at BRMB. Probably did that job for about 2 years, and I used to sit there. And once again, it was on the second floor. And I remember listening to the output of the radio station, thinking, you know what, I'd still like to be on the fifth floor. And Bob Hopton actually then left the radio station, and it was Mike Owen that took over as the programme controller then. And one day, this is how it happens, of course, Brendan Kearney, who was doing the Saturday morning breakfast show, was suddenly taken ill. And the guy that was doing the overnight show, I think his name was Steve Dennis. Yeah, Steve Dennis. He then suddenly was asked to do the Saturday morning breakfast show. And I remember Mike Owen walking into the office saying, "Could you do the overnight show tonight, Graham?" So I went home, grabbed probably 2 hours sleep after my daytime work in the traffic department, and then was back at BRMB doing my very first on-air radio show. And I have to say, I had to pinch myself to know that I was finally on the radio. I'd made it. BRMB Radio in those days was at in Aston Road North, and it was the old ATV studios where Crossroads used to be made, and that had moved out and into the city centre, and then BRMB had taken over that building. So there's a lot of history with broadcasting in that building. It was five floors. It was a proper radio station. You walk in on the ground floor, there was the receptionist and the security man there. There was the lift that took you up to the first floor, I think, where the boardroom was. And then there was the sales and traffic department on the second floor. Third floor was management floor, I seem to remember. It was always the management and engineering there. Fourth floor was the programming floor. So this is where all the presenters and the programming team were. And I always remember walking into what was the Jock's Room, it's called the Jock's Room, and John Slater was the evening show guy there. He just had hundreds and hundreds of vinyl that used to stack out the Jock's Room there as well. And I can see it now, I really can. And then the fifth floor was the newsroom and the studios. And there were two studios, there was MP1 and MP2, and then the newsroom as well. So I did my first show, I came off air and was just so elated. I was just so pumped up. It was just so exciting. And then my first full time, my own show with my own name on, was Sunday 6 till 8, which was the religious programme. Now, I'm not a religious person at all, but of course, I wanted to be on the radio with my own show. So, of course, I took it on. And it was actually produced by a guy called Nick Meanwell. So he took me under his wing. And I can remember on a Sunday morning at 7:30, I'd be interviewing the Bishop of Birmingham and playing religious music. In those days, I was still working in the traffic department, so I was doing two jobs. And then the overnight show became available. They had a bit of a change round. So I left the traffic department. I got my first on-air contract with BRMB. And I can always remember Mike saying to me, well, we see this as a 2-year period where, you know, you'll get your training and then we can maybe look at moving you somewhere else. Well, I think I did something like 3 months doing that. And then a position became suddenly available doing mid-mornings because the presenter doing the mid-morning show, shall we say, had to disappear quite quickly. And there was a show available. So I was suddenly brought on to doing the mid-morning show. So there I was doing mid-mornings on BRMB with Les Ross doing the breakfast show and Nicky Steele doing lunchtimes. And there was me, the young up-and-coming lad, doing mid-mornings. And I can remember the show had live interviews and guests used to come in. And my very first guest on that show on the very first morning, and he came in live, was Barry Humphries. So he came in. It was just amazing just to sit opposite Barry Humphries and do a live interview with him. And that went on for a short while. I then got the lunchtime show. So I was doing lunchtimes then for a couple of years. And then that's when the AM and FM split, and then Extra AM was born.
It's 8 o'clock on Tuesday, the 4th of April, 1989. I'm Les Ross. Welcome to XTRA, Extra AM. And that's the cue for the champagne corks to pop in the boardroom. Oh, well, they've stopped listening. Meanwhile, back in the studio. Born through a party
in the county jail. Phil Riley became the programme controller of BRMB. He had been programme controller of Extra AM, but then he became programme controller of BRMB. And he moved me on to drive time. So I was doing drive time then between 3:30 and 7. And I did that for a while and loved every minute of it. And this was, you know, hot rocking radio in those days. You know, most people know me now for being Mellor Graham at night time, but I was hot rocking doing drive time on BRMB, and it was a very fast moving show, I seem to remember.
Showtime with Graham Torrington.
We are the big boys in stereo, BRMB FM, kicking out 10,000 watts of stereo music power, GT driving the music home in the afternoon.
I can remember when we used to choose our own music. How exciting was that? On vinyl. Yeah. I used to drive into the radio station. If it was a sunny day, you'd walk into the record library and just pull out some great sunshine hits and play them on the radio. And how the playlist used to work was there was, I think, something like, I don't know, 20 songs on the playlist. So what you used to do was there was a box, I think it was a shoebox on the side, and you used to have to pick the playlist song from the front. When you played it, you had to put it to the back. And I think we had to play something like 4 playlist songs an hour. So you choose your song, you put it on the radio, and then you put it to the back of the shoebox. And that was how it was scheduled in those days. Just amazing to think how it was. We didn't have Snoop Sessions until Phil Riley came along. Phil Riley was the one that put in Snoop Sessions. So I can't remember how often it happened, but Phil would sit there and he would have a cassette of you doing your show from yesterday, and he would go through and he would critique you. And I quite enjoy those days, actually, being critiqued. B-R-M-B. I was at BRMB on their 10th anniversary, 10 years of BRMB, and we were given a party, and all the staff were given a party, and we knew nothing about what was going to happen, except we had to turn up at BRMB around about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and we were going to go on a coach somewhere. That coach took us to Droitwich, to the Chateau Impney, and we had a really lavish 10th birthday party. And I seem to remember they were giving out awards as well to people who had been at the radio station for 10 years. And the entertainment was Alan Freeman, Fluff himself. He was doing the DJ in there as well. How excited was I? The other thing that I was very famous for at BRMB was doing The Flying Eye. And The Flying Eye had been going for a little while before I took it over. Charlie Neal, who eventually went on to Central TV to be the weather girl there.
If you're lucky, you'll get to see some shooting stars. Got all the details of where to look in just a tick. But it is a cold night tonight.
She was doing The Flying Eye. And she was doing it when the Flying Eye used to be a helicopter that used to come from Coventry Airport, Baggington. And I'd covered for Charlie a couple of times when she'd been on holiday. And when it came to Charlie leaving, the position was open for doing The Flying Eye. And I remember going into Mike Owen's office, saying to him, I want that job. I want to do The Flying Eye. It was a thrill every single morning, unless the weather conditions went right, to fly across my home city, Birmingham City Centre, and report from The Flying Eye above Spaghetti Junction into the Les Ross Breakfast Show. And it was a real honour. And we used to take up guests every day, sometimes prize winners, or we used to take clients up there as well. And I can always remember when I used to arrive at the airport, we used to sit in a little office. It was around about 7 o'clock in the morning, and the guests would arrive, and they'd all look really, really excited. They'd be going in this, it was a six-seater aeroplane, a Partenavia, which is an Italian aircraft, and the nose cone had a see-through nose cone, so I could literally just look down between my legs and actually see the traffic and Spaghetti Junction and the M5 and the M6 and all the major arteries into Birmingham City Centre. So that was the aircraft, but they would get really excited, so we would take up four guests a day. I was sat there with the first officer, and we used to have sick bags in the back, BRMB. Branded stick bags, and they were all excited until we took off. And most days it was fine, but occasionally, at least once a week, you would smell this, yes, coming through the aircraft, and they would fill the sick bag, and you'd look around, and they would just be green, literally green. And as I say, it would happen at least once a week. But the thing that always used to get me was, when we used to actually land at the airport, they would get out and I'd say, are you okay? Yeah, we're fine. And they would hand me the sick bag.
707. Some great musical items for you in this hour, including the first record ever by that tennis great Jimmy Connors singing Good Volley, Miss Molly, and Vapor Doll.
Les is an amazing character. I went to school listening to Les on BRMB and never thought that I would actually get to work alongside him. Les is a real character, and anybody that knows Les will tell you that if you were walking along the corridor when he came off air and you got cornered by Les, he would stand and talk at you for about an hour, non-stop. Or if you ever met him in the car park as well, that's what would happen. And he was just great to listen to. And he'd be saying all sorts of things about the show and other people and management, and we can't do this and we can't do that, and they're expecting me to do this. But he became a friend in the end, did Les, and such a huge character.
Oh, what happened to the Paper Dolls? I remember the last time they were supposed to appear on a television programme, just before they went on air, the producer rushed up and said, sorry, Paper Dolls, you're going to be cut out.
And then things move on again, and management changes, and you know, things change. I'd also been doing a programme on a Sunday night called Romantica. This is another programme that I'd done, and this was a huge, huge show. This is before text and email or social media, and people used to write in dedications and letters, and it really was the show where people would write in from prisons, Winston Green Prison in Birmingham, and I used to get an absolute stack of letters from Winston Green, and also from different people wanting to pass on dedications. And that's really where my nighttime radio began, playing love songs and reading out letters on the radio. And because of that, I became popular for doing late night radio. So Ian Rufus then, when he became programme controller, decided that maybe instead of just doing one night a week, I should do five nights a week. And that's where my late night radio really started to take off.
So what's your My Love Letter? Everybody has one. Can you just hold fire with your letters for at least a couple of weeks, please? If I was sorting out the My Love Letters at home today, and every show is now full in June, so please do not send any more letters for My Love in June. It is completely chock-a-block. So just hold fire for a couple of weeks till we get a little towards July, and when we get towards July, I'll tell you when you can start sending them in, all right? So you can pluck up courage and think about what you're going to write.
Then came the time when radio stations started to buy each other, and Capital Radio came into the Midlands and bought the Midland Radio Group. And I remember sitting doing the late show at BRMB, and we knew that this was likely to happen, and we knew things were moving. But it was late at night, and suddenly the studio door opened, and in walked Richard Eyre, Richard Park, and a couple of other people from Capital Radio. They went, oh, it's all right, you know, carry on doing your show. And this is before they bought it. I just thought, so what's going on there then? And then within days, the deal was done, and Capital Radio bought Midland Radio. They then sold off certain of the radio stations within Midland Radio, but BR&B was the station that they wanted. That was a jewel in the crown for them here in the Midlands. Of course, Richard Park arrives, and Richard Park, being Richard Park, wanted to do things his way, and he had his plan for BR&B, and lots of people who were on air were not part of his plan, so I was dismissed. So that was it, me gone. And it was a real tough time, because I was having the time of my life. I was on the radio station in Birmingham, and to be told that you can't do that job any longer through no fault of my own was a really tough time for me. And I have to say that it took probably a couple of years to get over that, and I couldn't listen to the radio station. And of course, BR&B, with the backing of Capital Radio, was just booming. Party in the Park was happening. This is the first time it had happened in Birmingham. It was a major thing. The TV commercials, it was huge, and I wasn't part of that radio station. And that was a hard time for me, being the lad that always wanted to be on the radio in Birmingham on BR&B. Buzz FM was the other, or one of the other commercial radio stations in the area. And Chris Carey, I think lots of people know Chris Carey, another interesting character, was running Buzz FM. He'd bought it for not a lot of money, I believe. I have no idea how much he paid for it. But he came in, he wanted to take the people that Richard Park had fired. So I was on Buzz FM, and that was an interesting time, a really, really interesting time. Talk about seat of the pants radio, and I'm not just talking about on air, I'm talking about off air as well. Chris Carey didn't care about any of the rules and regulations. He just wanted to run this radio station, and eventually the radio authority came in and closed the radio station down. So that was the end of Buzz FM, and Muff Murphin actually took it over and put it back on air. From then on, that became Choice FM, because it was then sold to Choice. But Muff actually bought the radio station in Coventry, and it became Kix 96. And he took me there and asked me if I wanted to be the programme controller. And I have to say, I'd never really thought about getting into management at all. But that was the job that was on offer. And I did that for a while, actually. Being a programme controller was quite interesting, because I was sitting the other side of the desk, and I can always remember sitting on the other side of the desk, and each presenter coming in and bitching about the other presenter that was the first time I'd ever sort of experienced that, really. And I then go back to the Bob Hopton days of him actually saying to me, this is the bitchiest backbiting business that you'll get in, and everybody bitches about you. And there was I, being a programme controller, and the presenters coming in bitching about each other. So I think I knew from that point I didn't particularly want to continue in management.
We've turned up the power and injected more of your favourite hits on 96.2 FM. Baby, this is Kix 96.
I got a phone call from Steve Orchard. And Steve Orchard was the programme director of GWR. And GWR initially were a small radio group in the West Country. They had plans to expand. They were going to be buying up radio stations. So Steve said, we're going to start doing some networking of radio shows. Would you like to come and have a chat? And he said, I'd like to introduce you to someone called Dirk Anthony. So I went along and met Steve and met Dirk. And I can remember walking out of that chat, interview, whatever you want to call it, and thinking, what was all that about? What was all that about? It all went really quiet for about a month after that. And then Dirk phoned me and said, oh, it was really good to catch up with you the other week. We'd like to talk to you about doing a late night radio show. Would you like to come down to Bristol? And we can talk about it. So went down to Bristol and went into the watershed there, which is just on the side of the water in central Bristol. That's where GWR was based. And met up with Dirk, and he said, yep, we're going to be starting a show called Late Night Love. And it's originally going to be broadcast on six radio stations, but we plan to expand. And I went back to Muff and Ginny at Kix 96 and said, I've been offered another job, and I'm going to take it. So that was it. I ended at Kix 96, and I can remember driving down to Bristol in 1995. It was the end of October, and doing my very first Late Night Love.
So you're sticking with her because her parents think that you should be with her.
Yeah.
Her parents are piling on the pressure here and saying, well, you should be with her.
Late Night Love didn't end up how it started. Late Night Love was a show, obviously, at night, talking about, well, we weren't actually talking about relationships in those days. We were playing love songs and new dedications. And I remember thinking, we can probably get more out of this. So it was my idea then to start actually talking about relationships and just pushing the envelope a little bit. And instead of just doing a dedication, why is the dedication? Getting people on air and getting stories out of them. And that's really how it started to grow. And I did that show for 12 years. And we went through different eras of Late Night Love. I call them the sort of the early years when we played lots of love songs and just did dedications. And then it opened up into getting listener stories on air. And then it went through the what I call the tits and bums era, where it all got a little bit saucy. And we started rating the show 18. All the production was Late Night Graham Torrington, rated 18. And we purposely did that so as people thought, oh, this is probably one of those shows I shouldn't really be listening to, but I'm going to listen to anyway. And that's really when it started to take off. And because GWR were buying up all these radio stations, it was just growing across the country. And I eventually ended up on 44 radio stations. And as radio stations were bought by GWR, each individual radio station knew eventually that they were going to get Graham Torrington and Late Night Love on their radio station. And I can remember there's a lot of backlash in those days. I took a lot of stick in those days from a lot of people saying, why should Graham Torrington be on our radio station? Why should Late Night Love be on our radio station? And I can remember Dirk saying to me, look, you know, forget what they're saying. You're the man we've chosen for the job. Just get on and do the job. We will look after the politics of it. And we got slated for doing a network show. I can remember, you know, years ago that people were so against what was happening in GWR. But if you actually look at it, what at least commercial radio is about today, is all about networking. And we were the very first radio show to do that. And we got slated for it. We absolutely got slated for it. But this is the model now for most big brands of commercial radio here in the UK.
Going to bed with Mercia FM.
Late night love.
Teddy is having a ride. Give him a good long ride, Andy.
This is Late Night Love.
Suddenly, the GWR group were taking over radio stations and marching in with what they were called the liner cards and telling people, this is what you've got to do, you can do this, you can't do that. And for me, that was for the right reasons. And I know a lot of people didn't like that when that happened. But you know what? They got results from it. They absolutely got results from it. And I never had to do the liner cards because I was a show on my own. Nobody ever sat down and said to me, this is what you've got to say, this is what you can't say. But GWR, they were, well, this is why Dirk got the job, because he's an Antipodean. So they were coming in from Australia and New Zealand and coming in and deciding how the radio station was going to operate. And they took researchers in and they came in and said, this is the way it's going to be. And a lot of people were disgruntled by that.
Where's the most outrageous place that you've done it in?
Well, the most outrageous place I've done it was on one of those high stands where not foresters and hunters sit when they're watching the deer. It was on, in a wood on the edge of a field.
What possessed you?
Well,
it's amazing when people talk to me about Land of Love, and that programme has not been on air now for 15 years, something like that. And not a day goes by that somebody somewhere doesn't mention it to me. I read about it. A guest that I have on a radio show now will say, oh, are you the guy from Late Night Love? And yeah, that's me. I used to do that. Now. And it's amazing to think that that show actually grew so many stories that I'd forgotten a lot about them. But listeners remember. And it's just been recounted to me recently because I just finished my 40 years in radio, and we did a big celebration show of 40 years in radio. And some of the people who've been with me over those years came on and started telling me stories that I'd forgotten about.
I've been listening since I was 10, living in Solihull, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm 20 at uni now, but right. Thought I'd call in and just say thank you. For the last 10 years.
And it's amazing when people start telling you stories that I've forgotten about, that they remember. You see, they remember telling that story. They remember the moment where they were when they were on the radio talking about that particular subject. And it went through different eras. We had the tits and bums era, where it was a little bit saucy, where we said words on air. I can remember saying the word shag on radio. That was fine. We could say it was late night radio. It was commercial radio. It wasn't the BBC, so that was fine. But, you know, we'd arrive on a station like Orchard FM, and we used to get so many complaints that how can Graham say that word on the radio? He shouldn't be allowed to say that. Why not? Why shouldn't I say it? And this was, I suppose, pushing the boundaries, really.
You have a gangbang in your room, isn't it?
Bit of pick and mix.
Gangbang later on, apparently. We're in Ibiza this week. We're loving it up with our Late Night Love 26, our 26 listeners who want a holiday to come here to Ibiza for a whole week.
We got 16-year-old lads who love that. Because once again, this was rated 18. I shouldn't really be listening to this. And it got quite saucy at points. The other thing that always strikes me is when people came on air and was having real relationship problems, big problems, the stories where a woman would phone me up and she would say, I'm frightened to death because in the next hour, my husband, he's going to walk in from the pub and he's had a bellyful. And I'm going to get beaten up. Whew. That's really tough to take. It really is tough to take. And my advice would be, why are you putting up with that? Why are you putting yourself through that day after day after day? And the same thing would always come back, you know, because I can't leave him, because there's nobody else, blah, blah, blah. I used to say, well, listen, you don't have to put up with that. You need to think about your future because he's not going to change. You have to change to get out of that relationship. And quite often, within 12 months, that listener would phone me back and they would say, I phoned you right about a year ago and told you about my abusive partner, and you told me to get out. Well, the next day, I picked up my kids, I picked up a few belongings, and I went to a refuge. And since then, my life has turned around. That's tremendous stuff to hear back from someone, that I've had that sort of steer on their life, if you like, and they've changed their life because of something they've heard on the radio, something I've said, something that... And when I did Late Night Love, I had to remember this all the time, because I was Graham Torrington on the radio, because I was the one, their friend, that they listened to all the time. If I said something, they believed it. They absolutely believed it. So you have to remember that you're in a place of responsibility. And if you don't say the right thing, you could actually put them on the wrong course. So that was the emotional side of things. There was the fun side of things as well. There was the universities. I was massive in universities, because if somebody was grew up in Wolverhampton and suddenly they went to Nottingham to university, I was still on their radio. So they knew me. I was the local guy from Late Night Love. And they got together in universities and they would have big parties listening to Late Night Graham Torrington. And quite often, you know, you get them phoning up, trying to wind you up and trying to say swear words on air. That's fun. That was fun. So there was that part of it as well. Then there were the big moments, of course. 7-7, 9-11. Diana.
Goodbye, England's rose.
Doctors in Paris say Princess Diana has died following a car crash. She was 36. Dodie Fayed also died in the accident. It happened in a tunnel as the couple were...
That particular day, I was up in Edinburgh, actually. And like most people, I'd woken up to the news about Diana. I'd been awake about half an hour, and Steve Orchard, the programme director, phoned me, and he said, where are you? And I said, I'm in Edinburgh. And he went, right, we need you back. We need you to go on air tonight at 7 o'clock. And I said, well, my flight's coming back to Birmingham at midday, and I'll drive straight to Bristol. And anybody who remembers that day will remember how still it suddenly became. And I remember driving from Birmingham down the M5 in my car, and everything on the motorway was driving probably around about 50 miles per hour, and everybody not really understanding what was going on. And I got to GWR in Bristol, and I remember Dirk was there in the studio, and he said, Steve Orchard wants to talk to you before you go on air. So Steve phoned me, and he said, are you okay? And I said, yeah, I'm fine. And he said, look, just be you on the radio tonight. He said, that's why you're on the radio, because of who you are. Just be you. I went on air at 7 o'clock, and it was the time where the TV pictures were coming on air about the coffin being delivered back to the UK. And from that moment on, I was on air five hours that night, just the outpouring of emotion. And, you know, anybody who was around in those days will know what that was like. And it wasn't just that night. It was for 2 weeks afterwards. And even today, people will say to me, I remember that night, Graham, and I remember you being on the radio and just what a comfort it was. And once again, you realise what a privileged position you are in and how important those moments are.
Your candles burned out long before your legend ever be.
One of the things that people have said to me about my style, if you like, on late night radio, is that I listen and I steer listeners into telling me things. And one of the things that I learnt a long time ago is the art of leaving gaps. So somebody would phone up and they'd start telling you a story. And once they blurbed out the headlines of the story, they'd expect me to come back, of which I would. And the art of a good interviewer is then to get them to open up more. So you'd fire a question back and they would come back with something and I would stop. And of course, they then have to fill the gap. So they would start telling you things that probably they would not have told you before, because they feel that they need to fill that gap. And it's an art I learned a long time ago of leaving the gaps there. So the person telling the story would tell you more and more of that story. It's a great little trick. It's a real great trick for anybody that's interviewing anybody on the radio.
You need professional help because a man of your age should not be with a girl of 16. Your daughter...
Late Night Love gave me a couple of awards as well. Not that I'm major into awards, but it's nice to get recognition from the people in the business. So the first award I got was a Sony Radio Award. And it was for something we did called The Cuff Couple. And if you remember back to those days, it was something that commercial radio was really good at, doing big stunts. You know, BRMB did marrying people off and all the rest of it. We decided that we'd do something called The Cuff Couple. And we did it twice, actually. So the first time we did it, we got a partnership together. So a girl and a guy, they're already boyfriend and girlfriend, and we handcuffed them together. And we took them off to Rome, handcuffed together, and they had to spend, I think, a weekend. It was a Valentine's stunt. And then my boss said, right, we need to turn it up a bit for next time. So the next year, what we did was we interviewed people, put a partnership together. So the people that were going to be handcuffed had never met each other. The first time they met was in a radio studio. They were blindfolded. And we handcuffed them and then took the blindfold off. And they had to be handcuffed together for a week, and not just for a week, but a week in New York. So we took them to New York, handcuffed together, and it was just amazing. We did the show from ABC Studios in New York, and it was just a great thing to do. They actually did it. I think they won £10,000 or something like that, being handcuffed together for a week. The media got hold of it over there, and we went on daytime television over there, the equivalent of This Morning, that we got invited on that. And the New Yorkers loved it. And I remember being one morning in a diner, and we walked in with the Cuff Couple and we sat down. You know, we were from Bristol, you know, in the UK. Who knows us? And I remember walking into this diner and they go, hey, it's the Cuff Couple over there. We saw you on the TV this morning. And it was just huge, huge. And we actually got a Sony Radio Award for that. And then I got a New York Radio Award a bit later on for doing some more interviews on the radio as well. So, yeah, Late Night Love gave me my accolades.
If it happens in real life, we talk about it. Graham Torrington. Late Night Love.
Consolidation was continuing to happen in radio. And I seem to remember that GWR bought Capital. And it was a major, major radio group. And then suddenly, the group that owned Heart Global came along and swallowed up what was GWR, or GCAP as it became. And I can remember thinking, okay, Richard Park's back now. I wonder what's going to happen now. And everybody kept saying to me, oh, you're going to be fired. You're going to be fired. You're Graham Torrington. They won't fire you. And I went, don't you believe it? So it wasn't actually Richard Park that fired me. He sent a minion along to do that, of course. And I remember walking into an office one day. There were two executives sat there. And I remember saying to them, should I be excited or disappointed about this meeting? And they went, sorry, Graham, it's the end of the road. And that was fine. I went off. And that was the end of me on Late Night Love. And I knew it was going to happen. I absolutely knew it was going to happen. Although everybody said to me, it's not going to happen, I knew it was going to come to an end. And my happiest time on the radio has got to be Late Night Love. I don't think until it was over I really realised that. We were doing radio way before social media, before Jeremy Kyle was doing Jez's Confessions on BRMB. We were doing it way before that. I think it's only when the show finished and people, as I said, still today talk to me about that radio show and the power that that radio show had, makes me realise that, wow, that was a terrific time to be on the radio. It really was. That's my happiest time on the radio. Were they wrong or right to fire me? Listen, Global became an organisation when it was doing music radio, which Heart obviously was and became for all the other radio stations, and Capital, they became music radio stations. So somebody doing a late night phone-in to do with relationships just didn't fit really what they were going to be doing, what their brand was all about. I was not part of what their brand was going to be about. So it was right at the time. Having said that, I now believe that Heart do a relationship show on a Sunday night. During my time during Late Night Love, I knew it was going to come to an end at some point, because all good things come to an end. And I was getting a little bit older, shall we say, and I was looking at the next step. So I'd been talking to the BBC, because you do. That's what you do. You get friends with the right people, who are the people who could possibly offer you jobs. And I'd been talking to BBC Local Radio. They said, we'd like you to come and work for us. I said, well, the time's not right at the moment, but when the time's right, yeah, I'd love to come and work for you. Well, when I got the boot, I phoned up the BBC and said, right, I'm ready to come and work for you now. They said to me, well, that's absolutely fine, but we actually haven't got a job for you at the moment. Sit tight, we will get you a job. And this was the very first time that I'd been out of work, working in radio, since that very first show on BRMB, and I was out of work for around about 3 months, something like that. And then I was invited down to Bristol and invited to their mid-morning show on BBC Radio Bristol, and still living in Birmingham, so I used to drive to Bristol every day. And it was okay. It's not really what I wanted to do, but it was a job. I didn't particularly get on well with the management there at BBC Bristol either, so there was a little bit of conflict there. So when my contract wasn't renewed there, and once again, I knew that wasn't going to be renewed, it was okay. So that came to an end, and then Smooth got on the phone and said, would you like to come and cover some shows? And of course, this is when the big names, ex-Radio 1 people, were on Smooth, when it was like Kid Jensen and Simon Bates. You know, these big ex-Radio 1 people were on Smooth. And I went to Manchester and covered quite a few shifts there, and then got my own weekend show. And then covered for Andy Peebles, who used to be doing late nights there as well. And I was actually only there for around about 6 months. And then in the meantime, Gareth Roberts from the BBC, who was running BBC WM at the time, we actually bumped into each other. I mean, we literally bumped into each other. And he'd just taken over running BBC WM. And there was not a culture of a regular late show there at the time. It used to be Monday night was the jazz show, Tuesday night was gospel, Wednesday night was something else. So there wasn't a traditional late show there. And he said he wanted to put in a traditional late show. So he said to me that there is a possibility that this might be bigger than WM. But he said to me, he said, this is the BBC. You need to tone it down a bit, Graham. We want cozy radio at night time. We want listener stories, but you can't go back to the old days of Late Night Love where it's a bit saucy. He said, that's not what we want. He said, it's cozy nighttime radio, and it's a chance for people to unwind at the end of the day and listen to some good stories on the radio and also hear some lovely songs. So anyway, I went along and joined BBC WM, and then we went on to Coventry and Warwickshire. We went on to Stoke, Hereford and Worcester. There was not a lot of audience there in those days. And I remember my producer, Mark Newman, he said, we're not getting much reaction at the moment. And I said, listen, it's going to take time. It will take time to grow. And it took 2 years. It took, and I think it's because there was not a culture of a late show there before. It took a couple of years to actually bed in and build the audience up there. It then was that the East Midlands wanted to come on board with the show as well. So eventually, Late Night Graham Torrington, as it became, was run across both East and West Midlands on the BBC. And that show has just run its course for 8.5 years.
I read somewhere the other day, people who always tell the truth won't have many friends. So is that true? Has telling the truth got you into trouble or made matters worse? Do you have an example in your life of being honest?
Arriving at the BBC was interesting, shall we say. I'd spent most of my time working in commercial radio, and I thought I knew everything I knew about radio, all the politics, and everything that happens in commercial radio. And then you arrive at the BBC, And there's a whole new layer of everything you have to get through there. In its defence, what I will say is that I loved working at such an organisation. It doesn't get much bigger than the BBC, and they employed me for around about 12 years, and I thank them for that. And I have to say, they really looked after me right until my very last day. So thank you to the BBC for doing that. But I think anybody that's worked at the BBC, who's worked in commercial radio, understands very quickly what a different animal that it is. When we're in commercial radio, you could come up with an idea and you could get it on air that day. The BBC, it's like turning the Titanic round. It takes forever, and it may not happen eventually. And by the time it does happen, you've probably lost enthusiasm for it anyway. There's just layers and layers and layers of bureaucracy there, which I know they're trying to get rid of now. And I know, and I wish them all the best. They have to radically change. If they want to survive in the next 10 years, the BBC has to change. If it doesn't, it will disappear. And I don't want the BBC to disappear. The BBC stands for great broadcasting all over the world, or at least it should do. I found it difficult at times, really, really difficult. But I played the game because I wanted to be at the BBC. Did I agree with everything they did? Do I agree with everything they're doing there now? No. But I was a good boy and I did what I was asked to do and I kept to the rules.
Call Graham now. 0800 121 8181. BBC Hereford and Worcester.
If you want to email me, gt@bbc.co.uk.
Working 5 nights a week on the radio in different parts of the country, because I've always lived in Birmingham. Birmingham's been my home, and anybody will know that when you work in radio, you could be somewhere else this time next year. And it's a good hub to be in Birmingham, because you're basically 2 hours from everywhere, and that's accessible from most parts of Birmingham. But spending 25 years at night time, 5 nights a week, really, really cuts into your personal life. I'm very fortunate I have a partner who understands that. When I met my partner, they knew the sort of work I was doing, and for them, it's always been the same. So I've always been Graham, working those strange hours, but my partner works strange hours as well. So that kind of works, really. And I actually think that it's quite good spending some time away from a partner, because when you're back together, you want to be together instead of living 24/7, 365 days a year. So actually, for me, in a relationship terms, it's worked, and they would say the same as well. Geographically, sometimes it's been difficult, but you do have to give up a lot. If you're doing a breakfast show, if you're doing a late show, those are the times where it really cuts across your personal life, and you have to have a real understanding within your partnership and your family as well. And I've had to get over to a lot of people that I have 2 days a week or 2 nights a week where I have to fit in seeing the family, seeing my friends, enjoying myself, having a night on my own sofa, because that's important as well, because if you're not careful, you're never at home. So having 2 nights to try and squeeze everything in, to try and squeeze your life in for 25 years has taken a lot of organisation. And that's how it's had to be. How much of Graham Torrington has been on the radio? I think my listeners would say quite a lot, actually. There's one thing I've never talked about, and that's me being gay. And also my partner, because I have purposely not done that. I can remember having the conversation with Dirk back in the GWR days, and he pulled me into the office one day and he said, "Look, Graham, there's something we haven't discussed yet." And he said, the question is, do you talk about your sexuality on the radio? And he said, "Your answer is?" And I've said, "No. Why should I have to talk about that on the radio?" And he said, "Fine." He said, "We just needed to have that conversation." So I've never talked about my sexuality on the radio. People who know I'm gay know I'm gay. Listeners who suspect I'm gay can suspect. Nobody has ever come onto the radio and said to me, "You're gay, aren't you, Graham?" Never. That's okay. If they had, what would my answer be? My answer would have been yes. So I've never discussed that. I've never discussed my partner. The things I have discussed is, and I think this has probably come out a little bit more doing the BBC show. I went through a time when I lost both my parents 7 years ago within 6 months of each other. And my mum had dementia. And right away afterwards, I just felt that I couldn't talk about it. But then when I would have listeners who'd phone up and talk about dementia, I would say, I know. I've been through it with my mum. And I talk quite openly about it. And listeners really, really appreciate that. They really do. I always used to open my show at night time on the BBC, talking about what I'd done in the day. Even little things like, oh, how's your day been? That's how I'd always start my show. How's your day been? And I'd say something along the line, well, I've had my hair cut, or, you know, I've been trying to sort out, you know, phoning up, sorting some bills out, that sort of thing. This makes me a real person. This makes me just like they are. So those are the things that I've shared on the radio.
Late night, Graham Torrington. Hopefully your Wednesday has gone well so far. Me, it's been okay today. Oh,
there's been some great bosses. Anybody who has, take it out of radio if you like, but wherever you work, you will always have a good boss and a boss that's not so good. Like me, I've had both. Naming no names here at all, but I've had some terrible bosses, really bad bosses, who have not got the best out of Graham on the radio. And then I've got really good bosses who have enthused and told me to have no fear and to go and do what I'm good at on the radio and pushed me further. Because I think we've all needed that over the years, because we can get complacent. And one boss said to me once, you will survive in radio, Graham, as long as you can keep renewing yourself and innovating yourself. And if you can do that, you'll be on the radio as long as you want to be on the radio.
Here on to 1 o'clock tonight, it's the very last Late Night Graham Torrington. Kylie, Better the Devil, you know. And most of the songs tonight are from my radio days. My music producer
when
on this
program. When I was announcing my retirement, lots of people said to me, well, of course, you'll be back on the radio, won't you, Graham? And listen, never say never. If there's a radio program patrol out there wants to talk about it, of course I'll talk about it. But that's not the plan. My plan is to go and do now what I want to do. And apart from radio, the other big love of my life has been Spain, and a particular part of Spain around Barcelona, more than anything. And I reached 60 this year, and I always said I wanted to get to 60 and then decide what I wanted to do. I didn't want to be taken into an office one day and say, thanks, Graham, but it's time for you to go now. I wanted it to be my decision, and it was. I lay on a beach in the summer this year, and I decided that I was going to finish doing what I'm doing. Part of that was because announcements made by the BBC, and I just didn't want to be part of that anymore. The other part was, when this pandemic's over, I want to be in a part of the world that I want to be in and enjoy that. And also, I've got hopefully many years to still go and do that. So, no, no regrets. I've loved every minute of it, and never say never. It could just happen one day. I might be on the radio again one day, but that's not the plan. Radio has evolved over the years, you know, right from the word go. And in my time on the radio, hugely, hugely. What a change. If I think that when I first did my radio show at BRNB, it was people in Birmingham that could listen to the radio. Now, I can talk to people all over the world. How fantastic is that? I would still like good old-fashioned radio, that people call it radio. There's podcasting, there's all sorts of things now that are new innovations that are moving forward, but I wouldn't like to lose the word radio, because radio is really important to me. So I'd still like radio stations, and I think music radio is important. But I think they need to be doing something else that gives it a little bit more than just a load of songs on the radio. I think a little bit of the personality has gone out of radio, so I'd like a little bit more personality in music radio. And I think BBC local radio has got a huge job to do. I wish them well, but it's a tough gig. How would I like to be remembered? The man from Late Night Love.
Graham Torrington. For more in this series, follow the Radio Moments Conversations podcast. I'm David Lloyd, and if you do enjoy reminiscing about this period, then do grab my book. It's called Radio Moments, and it canters through an era very similar to Graham's. That book's called Radio Moments, available in ebook or paperback from me, David Lloyd.